On this episode, we discuss aloha.
Hello?
Goodbye.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hello, I am Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, coming to you live.
That's
on
not
tape.
True. Okay, well there you go.
I'm not dead.
You fixed it.
Yet.
Oh.
Unless when you're listening to this, I'll have died already.
In which case, in the future, hopefully.
Find my killer.
Okay.
All right, it's Stuart.
Oh, that was easy.
It was me, you found me.
Why'd you do it, Stu? Why'd you do it?
Well, it all goes back to the tale of the missing diamond.
Not the most original or imaginative name for the tale, I guess.
It's an old story. It was the first time a diamond was missing. Every other diamond story.
I like that it wasn't stolen. It was just missing.
It was missing.
Like it dropped on the floor and someone vacuumed it up.
This was before floors existed.
So what?
It just fell to the center of the earth.
The dawn of time.
It just kept zooming back and forth in the earth until it finally settled in the
Just one thing, Mr. Wellington. You say this was the dawn of time, but it was a diamond. Wouldn't it take millions of years to turn anything into a diamond? So how could there be one at the dawn of time?
I don't know. I think I saw a magman running around with it.
That makes sense. That makes sense. You're probably right. Okay. One more question. What?
Because it's in the center of the earth. That's where the magma men live.
I like that. Columbo's famous catchphrase. One more question.
What? One more question. Murderer say what? What?
What?
Case closed.
That's
what I thought. Take him away, boys. You know, Sergeant, we can't use that in court.
He's a sergeant?
Yeah, Sergeant Columbo.
I didn't know.
Oh, he's Lieutenant? Lieutenant Columbo. Oh, I apologize.
Yeah, that guy.
You busted him down.
Yeah, that guy needs some merits.
Busting makes me feel good. What can I say? So, Dan, what do we do on the Flophouse?
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. And tonight, we watched a movie.
Did we?
Called
I'm still not quite sure that we did.
Aloha. Directed
hello?
By. Hello?
Hello?
Ahoy. Ahoy, boy.
Ahoy, McCoy.
Ahoy, McCoy.
A popular sea captain.
He's the children's character.
A popular sea captain.
He's the sea captain who's always saying hello to people. Ahoy, McCoy.
That's what makes him so popular. He's not a crusty old salt like most sea captains.
No, very friendly and open. If anything, a little too open.
Yeah, he's a soft, silky salt.
He keeps telling
he's a
me.
Silky?
He keeps asking me if I want to come down to the docks and scrape off some barnacles, and I get creeped out. I think he's talking literally, but I don't know.
Nobody knows because no one's ever taken him up on the offer. He's got the most barnacle encrusted ship on the dock.
Some say there's a ship beneath all them barnacles.
The weird thing, the dock that his
I've
boat is tied up
it.
To, Dock Hollywood.
No kidding.
The first time as a kid that I ever saw an erotic cake.
It was Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, because they gave him it's like a boob-shaped cake or something because he's a plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
Is his last name Hollywood?
It has to be. And his first name's Doc. He's not a doctor.
Yeah, it's so, like the dwarf. Anyway. The dwarf.
Dwarf. Oh, I thought you said dwarf, yeah.
Well, I probably did.
I still don't understand why you said
I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have a habit of mispronouncing things.
I don't believe that.
Sometimes
really?
Slightly, sometimes drastically.
Old Ahoy McCoy.
So we watched Aloha.
Aloha.
Hello.
This is what derailed us the first time. It's a movie by Cameron Crowe.
Mm-hmm.
He of Say Anything.
The Crow.
Jerry
mm-hmm.
Maguire,
he made the Crow.
Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, Vanilla Sky.
He did. We bought a
we
zoo.
We bought a zoo.
We sold a zoo.
Why
sequel.
Did we have that zoo anyway?
And then the Treequel, which is the third movie in the series, which was called. Remember when we had that zoo?
That was weird.
That was weird. The movie rated R.
He also made
for hardcore nudity.
He made a movie called Say Anything, the Elliot Kalin story.
Oh, you got me. And he wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont Higgs.
Uh-huh.
And
I almost famous. Almost famous.
Famous.
Almost famous.
About a mouse that went on tour with a rock band. Oh,
that rock band, it Modest Mouse,
almost went on tour. Yeah, he was turned away at the border.
Yeah, because he's the border of what? Castlevania.
Yeah,
that's right.
So
the Catskills, come on,
Catskills. Yeah. So Cameron Crowe's made a lot of movies.
Yeah, he's well. How does it this seem one... like he could do no wrong up until
Elizabethtown?
A certain point.
And yeah, Elizabethtown was that point.
Point was Elizabethtown.
Did he do? I get him mixed up with Richard Linklater sometimes.
Yeah.
And I start thinking that Cameron Crowe made School of Rock and the Newton Boys. He didn't make those. Mm-hmm. Richard Linklater made those.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that Cameron Crowe made A Scanner Darkly or Waking Life?
Yeah, I do. I do indeed. And sometimes I think he made Slacker. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think he made Boyhood.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think he made Pi, which is a Darren Aronofsky movie.
That's
crazy. Not even a Richard Linklater movie. Sometimes I think he made.
Is it because they all have really striking uses of popular music?
I think that's part of it. I think Richard Linklater and Cameron Crowe also do a certain type of film that I'm going to call character focused,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Not necessarily plot focused. And in this case of Aloha, I think that's how Cameron Crowe went a little too far astray. There's not a lot of plot in this movie, and then suddenly at the end, there's a lot of plot. And the characters are not particularly interesting.
Well, here's something that I'm going to admit up front.
Final judgments. I didn't like it. Dan?
No. I'm just going to...
Aloha to you, too.
I'm going to admit up front that, you know, contrary to what you may believe, this may shock the average Flophouse listener, but we are
a first-time listener.
We are not paying full attention to these movies.
We pay... Here's the thing. I feel like it's up to the movie... To grab our attention and engage us. And this movie, mm-hmm. from the first moments, failed to do that.
Yeah, but
the movie didn't take away my phone or Dan's cat that was sitting on my lap.
But the reason I bring this up is because I feel like most movies we watch are bad in a way that they're still easy to follow.
Sure.
Like, they're so simple-minded that we can just, you know, we know what's happening because we've seen movies before. This movie...
We have?
Is... The problem with it is it's so dialogue driven. It's all just banter, and if you miss some of that banter, you're kind of like,
visually there's not a lot of markers as to what's going on at any point.
Yeah,
and
the
dialogue
plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, and even dialogue wise, it's weak. Like, they don't explain.
Why don't they just keep describing
their
personalities to each other over and over?
The characters do a lot of exactly explaining their personalities without managing to really explain who they are or what they're doing at the same time. Should we get into the plot while talking about it?
Let's get into the meat of these potatoes.
Because they're jacket potatoes we got in Scotland, and they sort of hollowed them out and filled them with meat.
That's right.
That sounds delicious. They do
that?
Oh,
you never had? Oh, it's great. It's actually fantastic.
Let's hurry this up so I can go get some jacket potatoes.
You can go to Edinburgh and get some jacket potatoes.
A scotch egg to wash it down.
Is that the same thing?
Stuff. Not really.
It's like an egg encased in sausage encased in fried.
That sounds delicious. Let's wrap this up.
Huh? Look, I've long said Scotland has maybe the best cuisine of any country. It's all fried meats.
You are largely alone in that.
The Scots agree with me. That's why they have the highest rate of heart disease in Europe. But anyway, science fact. Sad, really. This movie is about characters. Interesting characters like Bradley Cooper.
People of Hawaii.
Remember him from Limitless and what, Valentine's Day?
And My Little Eye.
And what is that?
That's right. That's what most people know.
He's in My Little Eye, where he plays a creepo.
I don't remember that movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Bradley Cooper from The A-Team.
He was in that, though.
No, it's true.
That was a big movie.
I'm just saying that, like, I feel like this late
Wet Hot American Summer.
You know, or
First Day of Class, or whatever that show was.
Whatever that TV show that he was in.
Like,
was there one?
You pointed him out for like a Silver Linings Playbook or something, or even like a Guardians of the Galaxy. You wouldn't go for some of these.
Who was he in Guardians
right,
of the Galaxy?
He's Rocket Raccoon. He's in the suit, the fursuit.
He's in the suit.
He's in the CGI fursuit.
I forgot that he did the voice of Rocket Raccoon. What about Rocky Raccoon? Did he do that voice, or was that Paul McCartney?
He probably could, man. He's a Renaissance man.
He is a Renaissance raccoon. Mm-hmm. He's a raccoonissance man, just like Leonardo da Rodent
with Renaissance.
Yeah, and they were like, you're a raccoon? What? We don't even know what raccoons are. That's a new world animal. We haven't discovered you yet. And he was like, yes, you have. That was 1492, dudes.
Anyway. Look at my sketchbooks filled with drawings of my elaborate bone structure.
And or was flying that just machines that won't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, take that, Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, dummy. Good job, dummy, with your flying machines. That's not how it works. Why don't you fucking figure out the Bernoulli principle and maybe it'll get close, you dumbass.
I mean, did he? Is that a thing he figured out?
No, I'm saying that if he did, maybe he would know.
Oh, okay.
He's got to fucking study the structure of birds' wings, you jackass. Fuck you.
Wow. Damn.
Dan, really calm down, Dan. Elliot, hold him back.
I got a lot of
Leonardo, just go home.
Leonardo, the listeners can't see this, but Leonardo da Vinci is in the corner right now going like, what? What did I do?
What's the problem with me? Huh?
Dan, I thought we were pals. That's why I come about to hear you recording a podcast.
You go the fuck away, Leonardo.
Should I not make my award-winning a pizza for you? No, please make that and leave it here. It's called Vitruvian pies. All right, I invented that a song. You know that because I'm a Renaissance man.
Yep. Hey, I make a painting for you. A real nice.
The lady should smile a little bit. You not know why. So that's how.
You loving this painting.
That's how he sold the Mona Lisa.
That's right.
Michelangelo's like, I tell you what, this is ceiling looking too blank. I put a two big guys, one with a beard, one no beard, no clothes.
Michelangelo, we just want a blue, like a sky blue ceiling.
I use that. Okay, you're going to like it a blue. I put a blue in it, but a lot of other things. Hey, that's a good boss. I illustrate a bunch of Bible things for you. Da, 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 da. Leonardo says he invented that song. I invented that song.
Hey, Michelangelo, are you the guy who made that statue, that guy with his dick that fell off?
It was called a Castle of Freak, the statue. Anyway, dudes, I gotta go to a party. A lot of people don't know that Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle's personality was based on Michelangelo the artist. Yeah. It's amazing you finished the Sistine Chapel with all that partying.
A cowabunga for you, huh?
That's a good rat splinter. Anyway,
and
so
I think he painted that whole ceiling using nunchaku.
So Bradley Cooper, he used to be with the military. Now he's a contractor for a billionaire played by Bill Murray. He has been sent to Hawaii, where he was before, and he knows people there.
Yeah.
In fact, his old flame, Rachel McAdams, who is now married to John Krasinski, playing the part of Woody, the Air Force pilot.
Not from Toy Story.
Not Woody from Toy Story. This is a different Woody. It's not Woody from Cheers. It's not Woody, like Woodrow Wilson being called that by his friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different guy named Woody.
And he's like, he got into like, he got into some bad shit in Afghanistan.
I mean, he talks about it later on.
Yeah, but like.
He talks about it up front that he got injured.
He got injured. Yeah, there's a voiceover where he explains how he got injured in the leg. This injury doesn't really seem to slow him down, and he kind of forgets about it for most of the movie.
Yeah, but also like it seems like what happened to him. I mean, I probably missed something, so I didn't want to talk with too much authority, but it just seems like the bad thing that happened to him was just that, like, a bomb went off and he got injured.
Well, but also, and he lost the love of his life, Rachel McAdams.
And it also,
so his life feel, it seems like, even though he has a.
It was also tied in with him being, like, what, morally questionable because he was skimming money off the top of his employer.
Yes, which I don't remember if we find out at the beginning, but later on he talks about how he was stealing money from.
That'd be tough for you to reveal up front and have sympathy for him immediately. He's got all these babes on his hands.
He has two, but I'd kind of.
He
only has two hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a rare disorder where sexy babes are growing out of his hands.
They're like a tiny ballerina from Eraserhead. They just live on his hands.
I guess you could call her a ballerina. Yeah, I'd call her like a radiator fairy.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, she's.
With big cheeks.
She's an entertainer.
Look, call her that. In heaven, everything is fine, okay?
That's right.
Everything is great. What did she say to that song?
I don't know.
Oh, no, everything is fine because you got your good things and I've got mine. It's a haunting song. Anyway, that's a better movie. Can we talk about Eraserhead?
Sure.
That's in some ways a more romantic and affecting movie than this one.
David Lynch never did tell us how he did that baby effect.
Oh, he mutilated a baby.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That baby grew up to be Bradley Cooper.
What?
Which brings us to Aloha. So
hello.
He's that's Stuart Smith. So he's returned
you can
to
borrow it. he's
I'll bring it back. I'll bring it back.
Just make sure that it's got a full tank when you bring it back.
That's right. Full tank of yucks juice. He has come back to Hawaii to.
How come they haven't marketed a kid's drink called a yucks juice?
It's you got to take that idea and run with it all the way to the garbage can and throw it in there.
Yeah, that's what the package is called, the garbage can. The package that you get yucks juice out of. It's like shaped like a garbage can that you stick a straw in through the top, and then the stuff leaks out the bottom.
Oh, like real garbage. Okay. Yeah. So Bradley Cooper is there.
And then the kid has to slurp it up off the floor. Or off their hands.
This is terrible.
So
I don't like it at all.
Bill Murray is a billionaire who is wants to launch a satellite to space, a private satellite, from a Hawaiian Air Force base. I think it's, or maybe it's in the water or something, and he's building a pathway between two, or a gate between two bases, and Bradley Cooper's whole job is to be there to facilitate getting real Hawaiians to do a religious ceremony to bless this gateway.
Because it seems like there's maybe some ancestral burial ground.
There's some bones
There's bones that have to be moved.
Yeah, they have to be relocated.
They have to be relocated.
So they can build their Stargate.
That's right.
Is that what that's made out of, bones?
No, but they're building a star. They're
literally a gate. It's not a Stargate.
But they're like talking about building a gate, and then they shoot something into space.
But not through the gate.
You can still call it that, though.
Although,
if you can call something a Stargate, why wouldn't you call it a Stargate?
If you go into Madrid, there's a place called the Puerta del Sol.
That's true, and the sun is not literally coming through
exactly.
that door.
You don't travel through a magical portal and get to the sun, but you can call it that if you want.
I will say that they should need a Stargate, because like 2001's Monolith, my God, this movie's full of stars. Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone, Rachel McAdams.
John Krasinski,
Danny Alec McBride. Baldwin, Danny McBride, Bill Murray, probably the ghost of Mickey Rooney is somewhere around there, you know.
Yeah, this is, I was saying,
who wouldn't
want
to spend eternity in Hawaii?
This is probably
because that's what this movie feels like.
The most wasted cast I've seen in a film.
Well, I don't know. What about like a movie where they're on drugs a lot of the time? That'd be a pretty wasted cast.
Right. All right, like what, like the last movie or something
like
that?
Yeah, like Dennis Hopper's The Last Movie.
All right, sure. But yeah, no, this is a movie where you're like, oh, I like that person. That's not going to help me. That's not going to help me enjoy this movie
anymore. You're hoping that their charm will just carry you through.
Yeah,
the movie
in some cases, like it works for a very short period of time in some cases.
I would say that this movie is roughly similar to bobbing in the ocean with no land around you on which to gain purchase. And every now and then, a piece of driftwood in the form of like an Emma Stone or a Bill Murray floats by, and you can kind of like briefly scramble onto it to catch your breath, and then it slips out from under you and you fall into the sea again, and you're just treading water trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this movie. So Bradley Cooper's there to arrange this religious ceremony. He sees his ex, Rachel McAdams, who's married to Woody.
And she's still banging.
And the, I guess, military liaison that's attached to him to kind of guide him through is Emma Stone, who mentions many times that she is a quarter Hawaiian and a quarter Chinese. And it's something that...
And 100% Caucasian.
Yeah, I mean, in real life, yeah. She, even at one point, she mentions that she's a quarter Hawaiian, a quarter Chinese, and half Swedish or Swiss. And even that kind of implies like, but of course the superior genes won out and I look blonde and white. There was a lot of negative publicity when the movie came out about casting a clearly Caucasian actress to be a half Asian Hawaiian character. It bothered me in that the fact that she doesn't look Hawaiian or Asian should be more of her character than it is. She seems to be pretty much at peace with how she looks. And another thing that's weird is that she's presented in the first scene as the kind of like all business, military discipline, like this is the person who's no nonsense. And then every other scene after that, she's like super chill, just wants to kick back. Like it's like the movie – it's like in between shooting scenes, she and Cameron Crowe talked about the character and changed their conception of it, but didn't do anything to address that.
Now, can I say a little something about...
Is he going to get us in trouble?
Yes. Now, can I say a little something about Cameron Crowe and...
And you don't care who knows it.
Men and women relationships in his movies.
Yeah.
Because I believe that it was after Elizabethtown, I may be wrong, that Nathan Rabin, our friend Nathan Rabin, coined the phrase Manic Pixie Dream Girl. I thought it was off of that.
Elizabethtown, or was it another movie? Maybe it was Elizabethtown.
No, I think it was Elizabethtown. And the thing about the classic Manic Pixie Dream Girl is that they've got we're not going to do that. I'm not even going to edit this if I find out I'm wrong afterwards. But the thing about the classic Manic Pixie Dream Girl is she does not have any inner life of her own. She's there to help the male protagonist like self-actualize
in like
some way.
She's like the Virgil to his Dante.
Yeah.
Just to class up this shit for a moment.
And like that was totally true in Elizabethtown. Like she's like, oh, this is a crazy like lady who's coming in and she's going to fix this broken guy. And it's also
true.
Are you
sure it wasn't Garden State?
It could be Garden State.
Oh, it could be Garden State.
It might have been Garden State, otherwise known as Elizabethtown Mark One.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Leonardo da Vinci come back in.
Also known as Elizabethtown, directed by Zach Braff.
Yeah,
but
except Garden State came first.
Yeah, but so this
Han
also
shot first, and the movie he shot was Garden State.
This also
Hot Shot first.
Han shot first.
Hot Shots Part First.
That would have been a great title for Hot Shots, considering.
So this is
considering the direction the series went.
But this is definitely
in that they added a part two.
This is definitely in that vein, in that we like Bradley Cooper is introduced to us. Like the movie just like basically tells us this is a broken man. It doesn't.
But
really
he never
show
seems
us.
Broken.
I mean, she says he is.
Yeah.
She tells him. There's a scene where she's like, "You're so cynical." And then she's talking about him to somebody else, and he overhears, and she's like, "But he's like this wounded guy, such a wreck." And you're like, "I have not seen that in him."
Like the second scene in the movie is her reporting to somebody, and he's listening in, and she's basically just describing his character, and he's like, "What?" But he's
and
listening.
She might as well be like, "He's so sexily broken."
Yeah.
Oh, the brokenness in it is something I've got to fix.
Yeah, with my vagina. Yeah.
And her, zest for life.
Yeah.
Sure.
She has a lot of zest.
She's zestfully clean. But I mean, like, this is just this is...
And here's the thing. Bradley Cooper can play broken characters. Silver Linings Playbook, he does a very good job of that.
Yeah, but in that case...
In this, he does not.
I feel like both of the characters have a little more going on.
I wish he had a cane.
Yeah. I mean, he should have the cane
Michael Caine.
That, like... Yeah. You know?
Hello, Bradley.
You know, Bradley.
Would you please not lean on me so much?
Bradley.
I'm here for you, but...
It's hard to buy you as a character with real problems when you don't seem to have any. If you could just even, like, grimace every now and then, you know?
Hey, guys, it's me, Bradley Cooper. Michael Caine, why won't you let me lean on you, buddy?
That's right. That's perfect.
A+. Wait, are you still doing Michael Caine? I don't know what's going on here anymore.
Oh, you're my favorite. I love Billion Dollar Brain.
I just wanted to. I wanted to get back to my original point because I actually have an interesting point about.
Okay, let's do
Cameron
it. Crow, let's not be silly for a moment.
Which is like,
sorry. Okay, this moment.
But like this character Emma Stone plays doesn't have like really much agency herself. As charming as she is, she's just there to like fix the main character. And Cameron Crowe has done more interesting love stories in the past.
Sure.
I think that Jerry Maguire works better than this.
The story of a super successful agent who continues to be successful and then gets a girl.
Yeah,
somebody shows him the money.
To some degree, like that's still a woman there who's there to fix a broken man, but
who's also not particularly broken. But Tom Cruise is better in that one at expressing that he's unhappy at least.
Yeah, and that movie works a little better because we spend a little more time with Renee Zellweger, so we get a little bit of an idea of who she might be as a person otherwise. And Say Anything, you could argue that that's like about a manic pixie dream guy,
yeah,
who like comes in
named John Mahoney,
and that makes it at least a little interesting because it's flipped. And I would say that the interesting thing about Vanilla Sky, a movie that a lot of people don't like, I actually kind of have a lot of affection for it. But I think that what's interesting about that movie is it's kind of an indictment of this sort of movie because Tom Cruise in that movie really like looks at women as something that are going to fix him, or as like something external to him, some like object that he can like possess, and the whole fantasy that he goes through, in the science fiction fantasy that he goes through in that movie, is his brain constructing a reality where this woman does come and fix him, and then reality is a total rejection of that.
Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm.
So I think that Cameron Crowe like has the capability to like critique himself, but he doesn't do it in this movie at all. That's all I wanted to say about that. Okay. Do you think back to our regular scheduled goofs now.
Do you think he had an idea and he lost his way due to like budget or pressure or whatever? Or do you think he was just like, I want to go on vacation in Hawaii?
So the Adam Sandler method.
Yes.
I think he probably wanted to do a movie in that setting. There's a lot in it where characters talk about Hawaiian myths, or there's a scene where they go to a place that actual Native Hawaiians live and briefly talk about how Hawaii is.
It feels kind of like when your dad just comes back from his first trip to New Orleans and is like, I can't wait to tell you all about jazz that I'm super into now.
Or like my dad has taken a couple trips to China and Singapore now as part of his work, and he comes back and like wants to tell me all about these amazing things he's learned about those countries, which is great, but it would be really irritating if he then made a movie telling me all about it. As if he's the authority on it.
I'd be really impressed if your dad made a movie just to like.
Just if he could secure the financing, I'd be impressed. That's right. You know, that's not a cheap thing to do.
He'd be talking to his backers like, well, what's this movie about, Mr. Kalen? Well, I just want to teach my son something.
I went
about
to this really neat temple in Singapore, and I want to tell him all about the statues that were in there. So I'm going to make a movie. I've already got.
Do the statues come to life?
No, but they represent different gods.
Is this sort of
a
night at the museum sort of situation.
It is daytime, not at a museum, but at a temple. But I did go to a museum, and I do want to tell him about that too. So I guess you know what? We'll make that part of it also. Anyway, so. Zac Efron is already attached to star.
As the dad?
As this, yeah, it's, we're going to have to put some old age makeup, maybe a mustache.
Who's playing the statues?
Perfect.
The statues are going to be played by all the original Bengals.
Oh, wow.
And
the Cincinnati Bengals?
The original Cincinnati Bengals.
Even Boomer Esiason?
The first ones. And one Bengal tiger, because there's more than one statue, and one of the statues
but
is a tiger.
But he's still wearing football pads.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's actually going to be played by Tony the Tiger in, like, a football-themed commercial.
Okay, great.
He's actually – don't believe the hype. He says that about himself, but he is actually just good. This is not Oscar material, but he gets the job done.
Stolen?
Yeah. So – there's a – oh, say, because – okay, I'm going to give you the shortest possible description of Aloha.
Sure.
A guy walks in
– to a bar.
He does at one point. He's here for this kind of small-scale thing. He manages to get it by making a deal with some Hawaiian people who we almost never see again throughout the movie. He falls in love with Emma Stone. She falls in love with him. There's some tension between him and Rachel McAdams, who he used to go out with and who – was ready to marry him, but the relationship fell apart. It turns out her daughter is actually his daughter and not Woody's daughter.
What?
And this causes trouble between Rachel McAdams and John Krasinski, who are married. Their son is convinced that Bradley Cooper is Lono, and a Hawaiian
Lobo?
Deity. Mm-hmm. Not Lobo, the DC
the last
character.
Zarnian?
And not Lobo, the 100 Bullets character.
Oh,
but no, not Lono, Lono, the 100 Bullets character. But he is alone, and the name Lono sounds like alone, alone, so I guess that's it. And Emma Stone and him fall in love. He reveals that he has two toes on one toe.
And it's so gross.
After a mishap in Afghanistan. And he invented some kind of space sound pulse thing that comes up later. It turns that they guys do that gate ritual. Great.
Yeah,
problem
and
solved.
Gateway from the X-Men shows
somehow,
up at one point in a
yeah.
flashback.
Yeah. A guy just swinging around a, what are those called?
I don't
like
know.
Like bolos?
Yeah, sure.
Not actually Gateway from the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to launch this ship, which has a private satellite owned by Billy Crystal, Bill Murray. It's owned by Billy Crystal. It's a satellite dedicated to broadcasting nothing but Mickey Mantle Yankees games.
That's right.
They're going to launch
I'll
this
have
satellite. But because Rachel McAdams' son managed to videotape a top-secret classified cargo, they find out there's also a nuke payload that's going to be on that satellite.
Yeah. This is an unexpected development and what seemed to be a low-key character study slash romance.
Now, I would love to watch a low-key character study. Or just Tom Hiddleston, just kind of like, or Huddleston. Just
don't worry about it.
Walking around being Loki like in his everyday
the
life.
Rip his head off.
Loki's head? He needs that.
Not really. He's an Asgardian god. He'll just be a talking head.
Mm-hmm.
Like David Byrne.
That's right.
Oh, now Dan's interested.
Yeah. Tell me more.
Stop making so much sense, Elliot.
I wish I could make any sense, but it's the Aloha screenplay. It's about to make even less sense.
Hello.
There's a Chinese hacker that's trying to get into the system. Bradley Cooper, I guess, is also a computer genius, so he defeats that hacker. And then
he explodes the satellite using the power of sound.
He see the satellite launches, and he sees that Emma Stone is sad, and he promised the Hawaiians that there'd be no weapons on that satellite. And so, he uses a sonic pulse made up of sound effects from other Bill Murray movies, among other things, mm-hmm. to blow up the satellite in maybe the worst special effects I've seen in a major Hollywood film in years. Like, these are sci-fi channel original
movie
effects.
What if you saw that in IMAX? How upset would you have been, Elliot?
Well, I'd be like, why is Aloha in IMAX? It really doesn't
You would have been throwing your
that.
Popcorn in all directions.
But it was like a collage.
Like, Emma Stone's face is enormous.
Yeah, he blows it up with like a collage of noises that included, as you say, the theme from Stripes, or there was a brief snippet of Starman, David Bowie singing
and
Starman.
And a Juan Valdez coffee commercial.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, Cameron Crowe is the sort of person that, like, this means something. You know, like, this means something to him. Like, the idea that he's using pop culture to blow up this nuke.
I guess so. I mean, I complained to you guys while we were watching it.
It's like something out of a Macross.
Yeah, regular Macross.
One of the Macrosses.
One of these. One of the Neon Genesis Evangelions going on here. Yeah. The Macross is the one where they're using music as weapons.
Yeah, and there's like a pop star roboconstruct that is fighting against the flying robot ships.
Yeah. Sounds good. Anyway, so I was mentioning to you guys that there's something.
I'm really underselling it.
I get this a little bit in Wes Anderson movies. And a little bit in Richard Linklater and Cameron Crowe movies, where when a song starts playing in the soundtrack, I can feel a little too heavily the hand of the director going through his record collection looking for the right song. And in this movie, it was particularly onerous to me. Usually it doesn't bother me that much.
You didn't mention Tarantino.
Tarantino, I feel that too. But in that case, and like Wes Anderson and others, I feel like they usually do manage to get the right match between song and scene. So it's like, okay, I'm feeling their hand in this, but it makes sense to me.
Those two guys are also much more interesting visual auteurs.
And often the visuals and the music counterpoint each other in some way. In this one, there was a lot more of like, and especially of like, well, I'm listening to Cameron Crowe's record collection right now. And in that scene, it felt like he may have put more time and effort into putting that sound collage together than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So Bradley Cooper blows it up.
Yeah, it all goes exploding.
He tells Emma Stone, you've got too good a career, like we shouldn't be together. And she's sad, he doesn't know if she's going to keep the straw hat that he bought her earlier in the movie.
In the probably the best sequence in the movie.
Because she puts on a hat that covers her whole head. But she's one of those feudal Japanese monks who's trying to create a distance between them and the rest of the world.
Well, it's a moment in
or
the movie.
Or like, what's his face from Fat Albert in the Junkyard Gang?
Oh, yeah, the one with the hat.
Mushmouth?
Yeah, Mushmouth.
Was it Mushmouth or Weird Harold or Donald?
It's probably
was
one
Was it
of them.
Crazy Donald or Strange Harold or Weird? They're all characters
Dirty
created
Mary
by a racist anyway.
Maybe
so.
She's more like Mort from Bazooka Joe.
Which one was that?
That's the one with the turtleneck that goes up.
I thought that was Bazooka
over.
Joe.
No, Bazooka Joe does not have a turtleneck.
I thought
Bazooka Joe is the most normal looking one of them.
I thought he was the one I thought he was the one with like a black eye all the time.
Yeah, he's got the eye patch.
Yeah, he's the normal one, Dan. He's the normal one. He's got an eye patch.
He's normal compared to the guy who's got a fucking
because Bazooka Joe takes place in the pirate
like a
everyone's a pirate.
He's bigger. He's more normal than the guy with like the Magnum turtleneck.
Look, Dan's trying not to draw attention to his disability.
That he has an eye patch.
That's why he's always backflipping out of the panel.
That's right.
Look, you're talking.
Well, you were constantly saying things that shock me so much that I have to flip backwards.
You're just your feet and a little puff of dust. You're talking.
If you guys
something.
Didn't say so many shocking things, I wouldn't flip backwards so much. And my neck would thank you. Because I have had so many injuries.
Yeah,
That's
much.
How Bazooka Joe lost his eye.
He flipped over backwards onto a spike. It wouldn't be surprised if I didn't know who Bazooka Joe was. You're talking to somebody who took years to figure out which one was Funky Winker Bean. It's not the guy with the glasses.
He's the funkiest one.
None of them are funky. If anything, he's the least funky one. And don't even start me about how little of a winker bean he is.
That's
Which
the one that's always on
the most winker.
That was that's the comic strip for band teachers, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
for them to put up on their doorway.
It's the comic strip that is either jokes about band class were characters being told they have cancer and then dealing with it.
There's like one crazy Funky Winger Bean where it's just a single panel of like
crazy Funky Winger Bean.
Savage
of a character like standing in the doorway, and then in the foreground you have a like a character like dead from an overdose of pills.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in my Sunday funny, sir.
Yeah.
This is I want to be reading Shoe funky. And Rose's Rose.
this is not funky at all.
Refunk this up. So they blow up the satellite and they kind of break up. Bradley satellite. Cooper finds out that Rachel McAdams and Woody are splitting apart, but now they get back together. Woody and they then put it together. It's made official that Bradley Cooper is the daughter's father. He gets back with Emma Stone. He's told by the military, who were at first mad at him for blowing up this satellite, that it's true. They found out there was going to be a nuke payload on it, so it's going to all be kept hush-hush, but he's in the clear.
Yeah, and they're arresting
Bill Murray's arrested Bill Murray. While standing on a beach. And he gets back together with Emma Stone and says, hey, when you come back from your tour duty, I'm going to be here. And he also – and then in a curious final scene, which we were talking about, could have been very emotionally affecting in a different movie – He finds the girl he now knows his daughter at hula class because it's Hawaii, and kind of silently expresses to her that she is his daughter, and she cries and runs out and hugs him and then goes back to class. And it's like
it's a very sort of touching moment in a movie that's not very good.
It's the scene. It's similar to anyone who listened to our Golden Child episode. And if you did, I apologize for the audio quality. The scene between the monk and his daughter where they're kind of like. Talking about how they like Eddie Murphy despite his faults, and he gives his blessing to their relationship. This was like that, a much better kind of subtler scene in a movie that doesn't really deserve it, earned that emotion.
It's a scene in a movie where almost every other scene has characters basically explaining who they are or explaining what they think the other person is constantly. And so they take anything that would be subtext and they make it text. So it makes this scene seem out of place at this point.
Yeah. Now, for a movie that has two love triangles, Bill Murray, Alec Baldwin, the military, one of the characters is a fighter pilot. No, two of the characters. And a subplot about a satellite that's going to have a nuke on it. Nothing really happens in this movie. Like, very little happens.
And there's at least one scene with Danny McBride and a baby named Don that was very charming.
Yeah, that part was kind of nice. But, like, it feels like you're watching the first draft of a script where he's like, I want to write a movie set in Hawaii. Maybe I'll deal with the military. I'll throw some ideas out
like
there.
Weird overtones of like the, you know, I'll bring in stuff about religion, like the indigenous people's religion somehow.
And then he wrote one draft of it, and then like Rip Van Winkle, Cameron Crowe fell into a slumber for months. And when he woke up, it was shooting. It was the first day of shooting, and he's like, oh, I guess we're shooting the first draft.
But we should move on to final judgments on this movie, whether it's a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie we kind of liked. I will say this is a bad, bad movie. I will say this for it. Despite being a bad, bad movie, I could imagine a scenario in which you're hungover on the couch, you turn on Aloha, might find it very comforting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that you could easily pass in and out of sleep while watching, and it would not detract from the effect of watching
it. So that's my recommended way of watching it.
Get drunk the night before you're going to watch Aloha.
Yeah.
A lot of preparation.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Aloha. You got to make the day for it.
Throw on some stretchy pants.
Oh, the stretchiest, because you're Mr. Fantastic.
Shuffle into the other room.
Yeah, you can be Baby Blast.
Find an old slice of pizza. Baby Blast. Wander back to the couch. Just turn on whatever channel's on. It happens to be Aloha.
Then you know what? Close your eyes, put a pillow under your head, and have a well-earned nap.
Yeah,
man. To the soothing sounds of Aloha.
You do you.
You did it. While Blondie's in the other room making you a giant-ass sandwich.
Debbie Harry?
it's funny because this isn't a very good movie, but there are definitely scenes where you're reminded like, oh, Cameron Crowe knows how to make something at least somewhat charming, or the actors are charming. Like there's moments where you're like, I could see how this would be enjoyable.
This could have been a good movie.
It does not earn the various streaming services tagline for this movie, which is say hello to your new favorite movie.
I mean, that's the only person who would possibly say hello to it in that way would be, what, like someone who'd never seen a movie before?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, that's amazing.
This is my first one. The first of first and only.
I can't believe this technology exists. Cameron Crowe, you're a genius, because he thinks he invented it.
Okay. So, Elliot, what do you think?
Movie I kind of liked. No, I think it's a Batman movie, but it's like this plot, even, and except for the satellite stuff, this plot and these characters and this setting could have been a good movie. There's the potential there, but it's not a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see a movie that involves the relationship between people in the military and other people who used to be in the military, and those people and the natives of Hawaiians who are feel like they've lost something and they're living under the control of another force, you know, of the American government that they didn't necessarily choose to be a part of.
I mean, it feels like, as you said, it feels like a first draft because every character could use a little bit more of a tweak.
Yeah.
And they could put a little more effort into playing up, like, the location.
It feels like the location is there for when they need to inject, like, a myth mm-hmm. or something like that.
Or set dressing, putting leis on everybody.
People are always wearing leis. There's a lot of pineapples
music,
in backgrounds.
A lot of Elvis and Hawaii type music.
A lot of Hawaiian music, a lot of ukulele. And let me just say this. When it comes to music, I am not the most accepting person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of music I don't like. Hawaiian music is pretty high up there on the list of music I don't like.
Okay.
It's just a little too mellow for me. It's all about laying back. There's a reason that there's no, like, Hawaiian metal that I know of.
Yep. You're like a real Bradley Cooper type character then.
Oh, yeah. Because he seems to like all the music.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing is it's one of those movies where everyone falls under the spell of a place, but you don't feel that spell.
Yeah, what is this, Tremé?
Yeah, it's like exactly like Tremé. And everyone's like, Nolans, jazz, nothing better. And you're watching it and you're like, this is boring.
Man, I'm sorry I'm harping on New Orleans today.
Yeah, well, they've been through enough
stories. Yeah, city suffered so much.
This delightful program is brought to you by Squarespace. Beautiful websites for beautiful bread like momsbunsbakery.com. It takes a lot of balls to name your business Mom's Buns. I don't even feel 100% comfortable saying that out loud, Mom's Buns. Although Mom's Buns look great, I gotta say.
Welcome to Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
Ross.
Hi, Carrie.
What do you think is creepier?
Okay.
You jump into a swimming pool. All of a sudden, the water goes away, and instead of water, there is the bones of your dead ancestors.
Ew.
Or mm-hmm. our show.
That's pretty tough because we visited a live exorcism.
We joined the Ordo Templi Orientis where we had to worship a naked lady.
Oh, and we joined that Tony Alamo cult. No. They were scary.
Super creepy. We joined the Aetheri Society.
We tried penis enlargement, or at least I did.
Oh boy, I tried breast enlargement. We have basically done every creepy, weird, fringe thing except for thousands more, which we will get to if you listen to our show.
I'd still say the swimming pool with my ancestors' bones.
Well, then I don't even know if people should listen.
I guess they shouldn't.
But if you want to, we're at Maximum Fun, and the show's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
Before we move on, I just want to thank everyone who came out to our live shows.
And came out at our live shows.
Sold out live shows. It was great to see people in person afterwards, hanging out at the bar.
Putting up with us.
Yeah.
Commonwealth, thank you to everyone who stopped by and said hi.
We had two great sold out audiences. Everyone was super pumped and super hyped up. And
I think I heard somewhere that audiences in New York are the best. Oh, wait, no, I shouldn't say that now because...
No, we might go somewhere else someday.
I want to thank some of the folks that helped us. I want to thank Matt Carman in the booth. I want to thank Jesus in the booth. That was his name, Jesus. What was his last name, Dan? I don't know.
I mean, I don't either. All the people at the Bell House.
I want to thank everyone at the Bell House. I want to thank Wendy Mays, who contributed some equipment and her...
Recording equipment.
Yeah, her podcast is called... Pet Cinematary, if you want to check that out. I want to thank Ray and Steven for letting us use their house to watch movies. And
they took good care of us.
Yeah, I may have forgotten anyone. And if I do, I apologize. But just thank everyone for making the show such a delight.
Thank you, Dan.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Stuart and Dan.
You're welcome.
Aloha.
Hello.
Goodbye. I want to just take a moment to give a birthday shout out.
This was not brought up at the meeting.
This was requested. I had a request to give a bolt birthday shout out to, quote, Ultimate Jin, who had a birthday on one of the days of the live shows, but she could not make it. So happy birthday to her.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for Penultimate Jin.
Yeah. Yeah. Always not, knowing that she's going to be.
Couldn't make the cut. Yeah.
Living in the shadow.
Yeah. But also, I just want to take a moment to say, hey, if you haven't checked out MaximumFun.org, go over there and check out our podcast network.
Yeah.
Check out the family. It's not just a network, Dan. It's a family that doesn't talk very much.
When you're here, you're family. Yeah. And here is Maximum Fun.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else uses that slogan. No other place claims that when you're there, you're family.
Spend some time with some baby geniuses, some popped rockets.
Yeah, some ladies to ladies.
Throw some shade.
Yeah.
Jordan, Jesse, and Go.
That's right.
Jordan, Jesse play the ancient game of Go every episode.
Sounds fascinating.
Oh, you learn a lot. It's the kind of stuff my dad tells me.
But now, let's move along to letters from listeners. You wrote them. We read them. That's the way it works. That's the way it works.
That's the way it works, Dan says. That's the way it works. You wrote them. We read them. That's the way it works. How does it work? Glad that you asked. As Dan said, I'll refer you to his comments that you write them. And then we read them. Sorry, that's how it works. Earlier. That's how it works. That's how it works. That's how it works.
Backup.
Well, if you guys picked up the slack, I wouldn't need it. That's how it works. That's how it works. That's how it works. That's how it works.
Thank you.
Letters is taped before a live studio audience of one cat.
So speaking of birthdays.
Speaking of birthdays, Dan was talking about.
That's how it works.
Birthdays, you're born, and that's the day that you celebrate. That's how it works. Anything you need to know about how something works, ask me, and I'll sing it to you. Unless it's really complicated and made out of words that don't rhyme so well. In which case, I don't know if I can help you so well, but I'll try till I die. That's how it works.
So we're not going to make a habit of doing these birthday shout-outs. I'm going to nip that in the bud.
Take that bud and nip it.
That's how it works.
But since it happened that a couple of these came up at the same time, I thought, why the hell not? Let's do these birthday things and then let's never do it again.
You mean they're twins?
That's right. So this goes, hello, Dan, Stu, and Elliot. Hello, Dan, Stu, and Elliot. I'm writing to request a song
done
for my wife, the lovely Michelle Sellers, being so super popular and Entertainment Weekly certified now. What can I offer as an incentive? Money? Compliments? Firstborn human children? Inspiring butts?
I have one of those.
Convincing Neil Breen to release his next film? A bit about Michelle. She's an avid flopper and promoter of all things Peaches and has recently taken to singing Elliot-inspired songs at random.
That's the only way to do it.
She is a particular Dan fan and supposes Stu is all right. Michelle is a feminist librarian at a small southern college, Zen Buddhist and cat lover, as aforementioned song suggests. She is
Real Mad Libs of attributes there.
She's quite the home cook, particularly skilled at Szechuan food with various fun dishes. She loves Kurosawa, French New Wave, and Law and Order in equal measure. She is spending the weekend in sad mourning due to missing your life shows. Well, this actually says life shows.
You know what it meant.
So
they're not our shows for Life Day.
Look, I'm like
I'm
like Will Ferrell
and
Anchorman. If you put it in the prompter, I'll just read it. So I guess that about covers the bases.
Are you Popeye?
I hopes my misc of Axkin. Potential bribing and referenced musings have won you over. Flopping your Devender last name withheld. So, I don't know. If the spirit moves you, you could sing a song, or we could ignore this.
So what was her name again?
Michelle.
Michelle Sellers. Not related, probably to Peter Sellers, another Sellers. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. When you're cooking Szechuan food and doing the other things that the letter mentioned that I already forgot.
That's how it works.
So happy birthday, Michelle. Next letter. I'm writing in regard to the great switcheroo and your stint on the Adventure Zone podcast.
Sorry about that.
That was a fabulous show. I've been a D&D player.
You are free to go.
You are absolved.
That's a callback to a conversation we had backstage before the live show.
Joan Wilder, you and your sister can go.
From your favorite movie, Jewel of the Nile.
No! So, the Adventure Zone podcast, that was a fabulous show. I've been a D&D player since the late 1970s. You remember, back
Dungeons
before you were born.
Dungeons and Dachshunds.
Even working at TSR, writing and editing Dungeons & Dragons products in the early 1990s.
The spaghetti restaurant.
So jealous.
And Stuart is one of the best DMs I've heard. He kept the story moving along, didn't get bogged down in too much dice rolling or rules mechanics. It was a pleasure to listen to. It must have been quite a stretch for Elliot and Dan to take on such difficult roles for the game. Imagine Elliot stretching to play a character who finds pleasure in making short, terrible ditties, and Dan losing himself in the role of his long-suffering companion. It boggles the mind. Thanks again.
Who watches butts?
For all you do, Bill, last name withheld. I just wanted to read that because I thought, Stuart, you deserve
all the pick credit. Me up? Oh, thank you. Well, I appreciate it. It was super fun to do. Thanks, Bill.
It was fun. Hope we get the chance to do it again someday.
Yeah, we'll probably do it again soon.
Yeah, I know you've been pushing.
Right after tonight.
What?
Just joking. J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Rowling Simmons.
So this next letter is from Paul, last name withheld, and it's titled...
Sorvino.
It's titled, Some anagrams of the Flophouse.
What could this be?
Some anagrams of the Flophouse. Hot foul sheep. Ooh, plush feet.
I like that one.
Feel tush poo.
Dan liked that one.
For Dan McCoy. Can my cod.
What?
For Elliot Kalen. All oat tinkle. And anal kite toll.
Hey, sometimes it's just accurate.
That's how the cards lay.
If you fly anal kites, it will take a huge toll on you.
For Stuart Wellington.
So many letters.
It's a world of possibilities.
For Stuart Wellington. Town slut triangle. That's all. That's it for now. You're all beautiful and talented. Paul, last name withheld.
Thanks, Paul.
What do you think about that? Town slut triangle.
Sounds like a movie just waiting to be tarped.
But
I'll never stick a kite in my butt again without thinking of that.
The last letter of the evening.
Oh.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Dan says it's the last one, and then it is. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
He's gonna read it. We'll talk about it. Then this segment is over.
That's how it works.
It's from
now. Now the breakdown part where it's spoken word. That's how it works. We're going to work it now. I'll tell you how it works with the last letter.
This is from Loa. Jesus Christ. I just said it correctly 1 second ago. And then
you did.
The breakdown.
That's how it works.
Dan says a thing and we throw him off. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Noah, last name withheld, Ark. Says,
Wiley.
I'm a 16-year-old fan who recently had a few friends over for a screening of a frequently recommended Flophouse.
I never
fave.
Thought it would happen to me, but I had my friends over for a movie.
I'm gonna say right now, not age appropriate.
This was, of course, the cinematic masterwork that is Castle Freak.
Yep, there you go.
You guys learned so much about anatomy.
Though I was disappointed by the lack of ding-dong ripping, I still...
Must have been going to the bathroom during that time.
I still really enjoyed the film. That is, until my mom walked in during the scene during the scene where the titular hero bites a prostitute's nipple off.
Yep.
It was, as you can imagine, painfully awkward.
I mean, I feel like it's your fault watching that movie when your mom's at home.
But even though my relationship with my mother is irreparably damaged.
She showed up with like pizza bagels and sodas for everybody.
Kids, I have Sunny D and the purple stuff. Oh my God.
Oh dear Lord, what's happening?
You started Castle Freak without me.
I still begun planning a sequel. Castle Freak Takes New York, in which the Castle Freak becomes a Broadway sensation.
Mm-hmm.
What would you guys want from a Castle Freak
sequel?
I'll tell you one show he's
not appearing in, Puppetry of the Penis.
That's right.
That's a Broadway show, right?
I'll tell you another show.
It was near Broadway.
I'll tell you another show he's Broadway not appearing Jason. In. Yakov Smirnoff Show, because it closed.
yeah, or Equus for both reasons.
So, what would you like to see in a Castle Freak sequel was the question.
Are we going
to
continue the idea that he is in a Broadway show, or I can, like, you can just are do, we blue sky?
No,
blue sky
the only boundaries is your imagination.
Okay.
That's how it works.
So, obviously, because it is the 21st century, we're gonna take Castle Freak to cyberspace.
Now, he died at the end of the movie.
Yep, so but his consciousness didn't. It's been uploaded to the net. So a local Italian hacker uploaded his consciousness to the internet in an attempt to break down, create the ultimate virus.
Okay. Now, is castle now an anagram?
It is, of course. That's a castle. Like a castle wall is like a firewall that somebody used to protect their goodies on the internet.
Yeah. Why do you mean anagram? I mean acronym. Yeah. So it's like computer assault syndrome terror. Life eraser freak.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wait, where's the freak part come from?
No, the freak is not an act because he's a castle freak.
Oh, yeah, because
he's still a freak.
Castle, yeah, he's still
he's even more of a freak now that he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he exists.
And freak is spelled PH.
No kidding.
A phone freak.
Exactly.
Or because he's, made of acid?
I don't know why that would.
Because of his pH balance.
He's no longer a base. So anyway, he's uploaded.
He's
to
not
the net.
A basic bitch. He's a phone freak.
Certainly not.
He's a freak.
So he's uploaded to the net, and then some Italian console cowboy comes along.
I love how it's still Italy, even though the internet is global. It's the World Wide Web. It's not just Italian
that's,
web.
That's a line from the movie. Oh my God, he's gone global.
It's a me, Leonardo da Vinci. Oh my God, the Castle Freak, it's gone global.
Is it a Maya computer that's made out of, sticks and rocks?
Maria
I made
pasta.
My computer out of spaghetti. It's a spaghetti network.
I made it out of a Babali computer shell.
Babali?
Babali.
Computer crust.
And so how do they defeat him?
Do
they rip off like a digital ding-dong?
No, they throw him off a roof.
Digital roof.
It still ends with them going into virtual reality cyberspace and throwing him off a computer.
Pick up his hard drive and throw it off a roof. Come on.
They throw the computer off a roof. It's just like that. It's just like that scene we always watched at the show where Mark Harmon walks in on NCIS and just
that.
Unplugs the computer to stop hackers.
But only after. So anyone who hasn't seen this, you've probably seen it. This is a clip we used to watch all the time of The Daily Show. An episode of NCIS where their science computer lab is being hacked into. Mm-hmm. And the hacker character, you know she's like a goth hacker because she's got like a nose ring and dyed black hair.
And pigtails and a choker.
Mm-hmm. And she's probably listens to a lot of like – what? I don't even know. Like
Five Finger Death Punch and whatnot.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. She goes to the Warp Tour a lot. But the
sure.
The,
she's a semi-professional.
Every weekend she's at the Warp Tour.
I mean, more than once she's been there. And she's like, I can't type fast enough. I can't type fast enough to get this hacker out. Another scientist goes, well, let me in. And the two of them start typing on the same keyboard as if that'll make it go faster.
if they're playing Heart and Soul on the piano.
Or like typing is the same as like pushing a car that's not working.
That's right.
So you're like, well, the two of us together will be stronger. And they can't type on this keyboard together fast enough. And so Mark Harmon walks over and unplugs the computer and he's like, problem solved. Because NCIS is a show for old people who don't know how computers work. Such a great scene. It's so funny.
So much wrong with it.
Problem solved. Okay, so before we unplug this computer.
Consider this freak castled. Starring Nathan Fillion.
That's how it works.
So now it's time for the final segment of the evening or day, whenever you're listening to this thing.
Or life if you're dying.
That's right. If you're dying, please take these out and say goodbye to your children.
I need to stay alive long enough to finish the Aloha episode.
Find out what movies they like.
Need to find out what the sting is after the theme song at the end.
Are there any bloops? Gotta hear them bloops.
Must get to the bloops.
Sounds like somebody's trying to poop.
It's a thin line between bloops and poops.
We have fun here sometimes. Yeah. Whoa, sorry, kitty.
No, it's not. I was supposed to have more time. Time for the bloops.
So, yeah, this is where we recommend movies that we
I'm
saw.
I'm sorry you have one bloop to live.
They get a good bloop. This is where we recommend movies.
Finish everything on my bloop it list.
That we liked in contrast to a movie like Aloha.
Hello.
That we loved.
I'll start. I watched the movie It's Such a Beautiful Day, the Don Hertzfeldt animated film.
Oh.
It's available on Netflix streaming. You can watch it in a mere hour of your time, and I recommend it.
Even though it's
highly.
An hour and a half long.
It's an animated film that, I mean, Don Hertzfeldt, you know, has done a bunch of animated shorts, but this is one of his long pieces. And he does it in a sort of a stick figure-y style that's deceptively simple. He's a really great animator, but he uses, on top of the stick figure animations, the pencil animations, a lot of collage, a lot of different effects. He puts in some, you know, live action shots as well. And it's about a character.
I guess what you're saying is he puts the ooh in cartoon.
Don't know if I would say that.
You said it, dude. I'm quoting you.
Now I feel ashamed.
It's right here in Animation Age magazine.
But
it's on the Cartoon Brew website. Okay, puts the ooh in cartoon.
But it's about a character called Bill who, it starts out as a bunch of unconnected.
His name is Bill who,
God.
Anyway, I won't interrupt anymore.
Starts out as a bunch of unconnected vignettes, and then it slowly becomes a story of how this character has a sort of unspecified terminal disease that means that he starts having hallucinations, and then the movie sort of tracks the progression of this disease. It tracks flashbacks into his past and his family history and how they've had a crazy, unlucky time. And then it flashes forward, but it tracks Bill's future, how the disease progresses, and how there's sort of a transcendent ending to it all. It's all about death and coming to terms with death and coming to terms with aging, but it's also funny and it pushes the boundaries of cartooning, and it's sad and sort of beautiful, and it all happens, as I said, in an hour. So I highly recommend you watch Don Hertzfeldt's It's Such a Beautiful Day. And that's my recommendation.
Sounds good. Stuart, do you want to go next or should I go next?
Sure, I'll go next. I'm going to recommend a movie I think you guys have already seen, but haven't recommended.
It's called Aloha.
I'm going to hello.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. I'm going to recommend a movie called Sicario.
Oh.
Sicario is a
it's
movie.
About a sick car. Yo.
Yo.
Let me see if I can pronounce this name properly.
It was stupid and I loved it.
Let me see if I can pronounce this name properly. Emily Blunt is in it.
Oh, okay.
Was that a switch 'em up?
Yep, because it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who directed Prisoners and Enemy.
When Harry Met Sally, right?
Probably.
That's right.
Now, Sicario is like those movies in that it's got atmosphere for days. It's got some heavy foreboding soundtrack. It's got some nice, long, slow shots. There's a lot of shadows. It's really tense. It's all about building that tension, man. And it's about the drug war along the Texas and the Arizona border along Mexico. The story focuses on Emily Blunt, who plays, I believe, an FBI agent. I don't know. But she gets kind of wrapped up in...
You're like, I don't know. I didn't see the movie.
I feel like, yeah, you're doing a school report on a book.
So Sicario is the story of a sicar that...
Nope, it says FBI agent on IMDb. So she gets kind of wrapped up in this investigation with... some members of a seemingly unknown U.S. government organization to kind of take on the Mexican cartels. And
to take on me.
To take on
take
me.
Take me on.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be gone.
And she turns into a tune, like your recommendation. So, Sicario, watch it. And it gets pretty intense.
All right.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I had originally planned to recommend at one of our live shows, but we didn't do recommendations for those. We had watched the film Entourage, and I decided to recommend a movie about a slightly more likable group of young people than the Entourage group, which is...
Jackass the movie.
Which is Class of 1984, which is one of the classic punk movies, and that is a movie about how punk teens are a menace who will rape and kill people, but the movie ends up being such an antisocial, like, enjoyable piece of trash that it's kind of more punk than they meant it to be. That's not a surprise. It's directed by Mark Lester, who you know best as the director of Commando, mm-hmm. another movie that is such trash that it becomes brilliant. And it stars a whole slew of stars, Timothy Van Patten, Roddy McDowall, Michael J. Fox, before he put the J in his name when he was just Michael Fox.
Whoa.
And it's all about how these kids in the 80s with their punk music and their crazy haircuts are going to start acting up, swearing at teachers, and running drug rings and prostitution rings out of the backs of nightclubs and killing people. And it's a super crazy, enjoyable movie, except for a sexual assault scene that I did not care for, that I watched again recently having not seen it in a long time, and I'd forgotten about this scene somehow, and I did not like that part. That was unnecessary. But otherwise, it's if you wanted to see a band teacher, this is for Funky Winkerbean fans out there. Sure. If you want to see a band teacher
the funkiest.
Get his life ruined by a bunch of crazy punk teens who have the greatest wardrobes maybe in the history of film, and then he gets revenge on them by killing all of them, then this is the movie for you, Class of 1984. Theme song by Alice Cooper.
All right.
Well, he sang it. He didn't write it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jesus. Jump down my throat. God.
You're not the cat from Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Yeah.
Dan's not Buster Poindexter.
Yes.
Star of Free Jack.
Yet. Supporting
star
character.
Star of Free Jack.
He's not even the second lead from Free Jack.
Who is it? Mick Jagster?
Yeah. You're better off calling him the star of Scrooge, which he's also not the star of.
He just plays the cabbie,
he's
the main character.
Cab ghost of the past.
Now, how much does the Jack cost in that movie?
I don't know, probably $25.
Well, really?
Or best
surprisingly
offer.
Surprisingly expensive.
Yeah. No, it's because it's GMO-free.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Free-range Jack.
Yeah, it's free-range grass-fed Jack. It's healthier
it's
that
kangaroo
way.
Kangaroo Jack. Which
do not
very
want.
Little fat.
What if Mick Jagger pulled Kangaroo Jack from the past in Free Jack? How disappointed would he be when he's like, I thought you were going to be a rapping kangaroo, but you're just a regular kangaroo. That was a dream sequence or something?
Yeah.
Can't get no satisfaction. Under your thumb, Roo.
Perfect. Keep going. How many other songs do you know about
the
stems?
Beast of Burden in this case would be a kangaroo, of course.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for a friend named
Wild
Kangaroo Jack.
Kangaroos couldn't drag me away.
Yeah, exactly. Voodoo Lounge.
Brown
good
sugar
for kangaroos.
Clearly
Voodoo
is the brown
lounge.
Of the kangaroo's pelt.
And the sweetness of the pouch.
That's where they keep all their treats, I
other
guess.
Rolling Stones songs. You got Sympathy for the Kangaroo.
Paint it sack.
Jack. It's called Kangaroo Jack. Paint it Jack. Paint it sack.
I was just thinking of the bag.
Yeah, because of the famous kangaroo scrotum. Which they turned into what, bagpipes?
Their famous song, Can't You Hear Me Jackin'? All right.
And of course, who could forget? Dan, give me a Jack Sucker Blues. There you go. Mm-hmm. The unreleased Stone song.
Not Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Damn it.
Shit. Oh, snap.
There's lying on the ground and you walked right past it.
I did not see it. I'm picking up pennies and there's a gold bar sitting right in front of me. Stuart, that's how it works.
That's how it works.
So, but anyway, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin. And that's the end of the show. We say our names and say goodbye, and that's how it works.
Aloha.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah. Those bloopers are going to the poopers,
too.
Those
are top bloops.
Tonight on Pooper Bloopers, your favorite collection video of bloopers of people failing to use the toilet properly.
Why was a camera on them? Who knows?
But that's not a toilet. That's a sink. Going.
Those aren't kids. Those are normal adults. What's going on?
This guy just can't seem to get the paper to his anus. Let's watch what happens.
Live.
It's called Boobers and Rectical Jokes. The Sergio Aragonés cartoons are disgusting.
Dick craps. Boobers.
Dick craps. Boobers and Rectical Jokes.
Okay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Let's be honest, we live in a world with too much media. You need a podcast on the front lines figuring out what's great.
We're here for you. We're Pop Rocket.
I am Guy Branum. I'm a comedian.
I'm Winter Mitchell. I call myself a digital strategist.
I'm Oliver Wang, academic and disc junkie.
Margaret Wappler, je suis es journaliste.
And we watch, listen to, and read everything so that you don't have to. And then we tell you about all the things that you'll love to love.
Find us in iTunes or wherever you download podcasts.
Pop Rocket, every Wednesday from MaximumFun.org.